well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, provided the people that keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards, and unfortunately we're going to be talking about at least one infringement, as well as some infringements avoided here on today's program. You know, we are getting close to the end of session in a lot of states, for both good and bad. So we'll talk about what happened in New York this session, which actually was pretty good news for gun owners. But we're also going to talk about what happened yesterday in Rhode Island, which is not great news. This amended version of the so-called assault weapons ban passing out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, this committee had been rumored to be tied, deadlocked 5-5. And so if the vote came up, then the bill would die. Now, there's a quirk in Rhode Island's legislative rules that allows for Senate leadership, and I guess the House leadership as well, to vote on bills to sit in, basically in any committee and vote. And that's what happened yesterday. So there were 14 votes in this 10-member committee, and the vote ended up being 8-6. The bill would have tied 7-7 and would have died were it not for one Democrat state senator who was expected to vote against the bill, who instead voted for the legislation. So the bill now heads to the floor of the Senate, and the Boston Globe is reporting that the full Senate is expected to vote on this tomorrow. Now, tomorrow, as the Globe reports, is set to be the last day of this year's General Assembly session, which means that tomorrow is likely to be incredibly hectic because the Senate changed. This is a Senate bill. They voted basically to suspend the House bill that the House had already approved. So it's not a matter of the Senate passing this bill and then it going to Governor McKee. The House is going to have to take action too. And again, ordinarily, you wouldn't be able to bring a bill from the Senate floor to the House floor for a vote in the same day, right? That bill would have to go over to a committee. Because there's a difference between the House and Senate versions, typically you'd see a conference committee. That's not going to happen. I don't know what parliamentary sleight of hand is going to be used tomorrow, but there will be an attempt to bring that Senate bill, if it passes, and we'll talk about that, and in what form it passes, to the House floor if necessary. Again, the bill was amended, but there's nothing saying that that bill is going to stay amended. Let's say there's nothing stopping the bill from being re-amended once it hits the floor. And in fact, that is exactly what the House Speaker is hoping for. Joseph Shikarchi, Democrat from Warwick, Rhode Island, issued a statement saying, "I'm withholding comment until the entire Senate considers the bill. The final bill is subject to change on the Senate floor, so it would be premature to comment at this time." So that, I mean, that was a comment in and of itself, right? They're going to try to amend the Senate bill so that it aligns with what was passed out of the House of Representatives. And then, presumably, the legislation could go to Governor McKee's desk. He wouldn't have to try to send this over to the House at the last moment. Most important thing for Rhode Island gun owners is don't give up. Don't give up. Light up the phones of your lawmakers and urge them, if they have voted against this bill before, to stand firm. If you are a representative of the, or if you are represented by the state senator who switched their vote, I would still be polite, but I would let your opinion be known that you don't appreciate that. And he has a chance to do the right thing. He did not face a primary or a general election opponent, by the way, in his last election. So I think that should change there in Rhode Island. We will be keeping our eyes open for what happens tomorrow. We'll give you full details on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. My gut tells me that something is going to get to Governor McKee's desk, but I don't know how that happens. I don't know what it looks like. But again, don't give up. If you're a Rhode Island gun owner, you have been out in force this session, and you need to keep fighting till the bitter end. All right, now on to a state that has adjourned, New York State. And as NRA's Institute for Legislative Action reports, the Democrats got out of Albany without enacting really any new gun control laws, which is pretty amazing. They did pass a bill that offers a full season for crossbow hunting, I guess that's about as pro-gun as New York's lawmakers are willing to get. But here are some of the bills that we actually avoided. Senate bill, and I'm just going to go with the, I wouldn't even use the bill numbers because they're dead. Who cares? A bill establishing a voluntary waiver of the right to purchase firearms, rifles, and shotguns, which passed the Senate 47-15, but the Assembly version remained in the Assembly Rules Committee. Yeah, I wrote about these do not sell lists yesterday for bearing arms, actually, because there was a piece by a law professor named Frederick Vars who says this is a great way to not only prevent suicide, but it's a great way to ultimately prevent the cycle of violence that stems from mass shootings. And he talked about these laws being on the books in several states. Virginia is one of them. And I remember that I had actually asked the Virginia State Police a couple of years ago, how many people are on this list? It went into effect in 2021. So I asked about a year later. I asked in July of 2022, how many people are on this do not sell list? There were 24 names at the time, 24 Virginians. I asked again this week, heard back from the Virginia State Police, 50, I believe it's 54 or 56. I don't have the number right in front of me. People on the list. So it's more than doubled, but still less than 75 people, still less than 60 people in a state with a population of more than 6 million. I mean, honestly, are these do not sell lists the most offensive pieces of legislation out there? No. But honestly, if the state is going to get involved, I would prefer the state develop grant money to voluntary offsite stores, things like Hold My Guns. The Wisconsin Gun Store Project that we've talked about in the past, that's, I think, a much better way of addressing suicide prevention, but also doing it in a way where it's not a big brother government, right? Because you can put yourself on that list. It might not be easy to get off that list. And is there a stigma attached to that? So I'm glad to see that that bill went nowhere. Another bill would have required the Division of Criminal Justice Services to study the technological viability of personalized handguns, in other words, smart guns. Senate passed the bill, 40-19, but did not advance out of the Assembly. Then there was a Senate Bill 1472, which NRA ILAs had attacked NRA instructors and would have upended the entire concealed carry process in New York. The bill removed responsibility for curriculum and certification to the Division of Criminal Justice Services. Senate passed the bill 42-20. The Assembly did not act. And again, we've seen this in a couple of states post-Bruin. Either moves to increase the training mandates, training hours. I mean, New York did that, as a matter of fact. But again, also to say that it's the, you know, NRA certified firearms instructors are not good enough. California has done this, right? So you got to be certified by the state of California, which is a whole issue in and of itself. And until those folks are certified, guess what? They can't teach the concealed carry course. And if you can't take the concealed carry course, you can't apply for a concealed carry permit. So a really good way of delaying, if not denying outright, the exercise of the right to bear arms. Harry also talked about another bill that prohibited the taking of game with lead ammunition on state lands, which failed to pass the either chamber of Orison. That is good news because we know that the attacks on traditional ammunition are continuing around the country. Then there was the bill that would have established a 10-day waiting period for the purchase of all firearms, which passed the Senate again, 40-22. That seems to be the magic number for the state Senate right now. But this will definitely be back next year because it did make progress. The Assembly bill got stuck in the Senate Codes Committee. So it may have been just a matter of timing on that bill. And they'll be back at it with a 10-day waiting period next session. The last bill that NRA ILA mentioned was one that we've written about at Bearing Arms before. This is the bill that would have essentially banned Glock handguns. As NRA ILA said, the bill was especially bad because of the broad language, which would have banned a whole class of commonly owned pistols, primarily Glocks, though. Fortunately, both bills remained in committee and did not advance. Now, I will say I'm surprised that these bills did not advance out of committee. And I suspect that and we've seen, you know, similar legislation introduced in California, which has made progress. I think it passed the state Senate. So we're now on the Assembly side. We'll see what happens there. This is a strategy that the gun control lobby is leaning into heavily. Okay, fine. We can't ban an entire class of handguns. Can we ban the most popular handgun by claiming that it's readily convertible into machine guns, so it should be treated like machine guns, therefore it should be banned? You've got litigation arguing that to that effect in Chicago. State of Illinois has also introduced legislation that would ban the sale of essentially Glocks. As I mentioned, California. Bill was introduced in New York. So this is new, and it may take a session or two for lawmakers to hop on board this particular bill, because I think they like talking about things that they have either tried to pass before and have failed to do so, or at least stuff that's, you know, around, like universal background checks, bans on assault weapons. They know the talking points for that stuff. Banning Glocks, banning the most popular handgun in the country, that's different. I mean, heck, Kamala Harris claimed to own a Glock, right? And if it's okay for Kamala, well, why didn't it be okay for everybody else? So anyway, keep that on your radar. I'm really glad to see that the New York Assembly and the New York State did not take action on that bill, but that one too is going to be rearing its ugly head here in the not too distant future. All right. So there you go. A look at some concerning news in Rhode Island, some good news in New York. And now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, which comes to us from Florida. Former Century resident extradited to Escambia County to face murder charges. And not the first time that this individual has faced charges. Anthony Demetrius Ewing, who's 34, booked into the Escambia County Jail on Wednesday on felony charge of second-degree murder and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, now being held without bond. Back in 2010, Ewing was sentenced to 10 years in prison on charges related to a 2009 crime spree in which he robbed a Tom Thumb grocery store, stole tires in Century to fix a flat on his getaway car, instead of stealing another, and then escaped from deputies after he was arrested. Later implicated in an attempt to pass counterfeit money. He was sentenced to 11 months in the county jail for that crime. He also served time in state prison for grand theft, robbery by sudden snatching, burglary, weapons possession by a convicted felon, and carrying a concealed weapon. And on January 27th of this year, he was released from prison after serving 3 years for cocaine possession and obstruction. It sounds like he's actually done more time for possessing cocaine than he has for possessing a firearm as a convicted violent felon, which is a little troublesome to me. Not to mention, hasn't spent much time behind bars for the actual violent offenses, which is another problem in and of itself. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. Now, this one is interesting. So this is the headline that popped up as I was doing news searches for defensive gun uses. DA declines charges in fatal shooting near Portland preschool, cites self-defense. When I actually clicked on the link, however, this headline came up. Body camera shows lead up to fatal shooting next door to Portland preschool, which I would argue may be factual, but is biased because it removes any mention of self-defense. And maybe this is just clickbait, but I had an issue with that. Anyway, the story itself, the Multnomah County DA has declined to press charges against a security guard who fatally shot someone outside of a Portland Jewish preschool in May, ruling that the shooting was justified self-defense. Eric Salisbury is a licensed security guard employed by the Gann preschool, shot 32-year-old Manuel Castillo Garza IV on May the 8th. Garza died from complications of the gunshot wound. The Attorneys for Freedom law firm, which represented Salisbury, said in a statement that prosecutors determined that the shooting was a lawful act of self-defense. Deputy District Attorney Andrew Wood said the Portland Police Bureau investigation concluded that Salisbury's use of force was justified under Oregon law and therefore not criminal. Incident started around 11:50 a.m. on May the 8th when Garza drove into the parking lot of the Jewish Community Center and preschool, driving through the lot, returning, then driving through it again at an unsafe speed, almost striking Salisbury, according to the district attorney. Salisbury, who is a uniformed and armed security guard, followed Garza into the neighboring and medical clinical parking lot. There, Garza got out of his vehicle. The two began yelling at one another. Salisbury put his hands around Garza's neck at one point before he being knocked to the ground. DA's office says that Garza at one point was on top and strangling Salisbury, with the footage showing Garza maintaining a dominant position on Salisbury as Garza continued his assault. Salisbury then gave a verbal warning that he would shoot. Garza responded by screaming, "Shoot me," and continued attacking, yelling profanities at the guard, according to the district attorney. Witness eating lunch in her car. Saw Garza attack Salisbury, knock off his glasses and earpiece before the witness ran inside out of fear that she would be attacked next. So, yeah, I mean, again, it sounds like this was, you know, maybe an incident that could have been avoided had Salisbury not followed Garza to that medical center parking lot. But at the same time, once you are attacked and assaulted, you have a right to protect yourself. And that is, it sounds like, clearly the case there in Portland, Oregon. So we'll keep our eyes on any more information if any more information becomes available there. And finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, despite being told afterwards that it was not the right thing to do. A woman in North Carolina who saved the life of a car, or excuse me, of a dog who was stuck in a hot car on a summer's day. Normally we don't talk about, you know, good deeds involving animals, but this one bothers me because of the reaction from the officer there. And maybe North Carolina law is silent on this. But anyway, Susanna Vella said it was back on June the 7th. She saw a dog that was panting inside a hot car that was parked in a shopping center parking lot. She said she called 911, that she looked for the dog's owner, but after not finding them, she opened the car door, which was unlocked, by the way, and gave the dog some water. So she didn't even, like, break the window to save the life of the dog. She opened the car door. Vella said, I was really concerned because I know it only takes a few minutes for dogs to go into heat stroke. It was a 90-degree day. It wasn't even a decision, I knew. But when a Cornelius, North Carolina police officer arrived at the scene, he reprimanded her for going into the vehicle to help the dog. Vella said, I was shocked. I could tell the officer was really upset. He just kind of yelled at me and told me I had no right to go into the vehicle. And he repeatedly asked the owner if he wanted to press charges on me. According to the Cornelius Police Department, they got a 911 call from Vella at 2:18 p.m. Officer was dispatched at 2:19 p.m. He arrived at the scene at 2:26 p.m. So, 8 minutes after she called 911. Vella says that could have been too long to wait. And it could have been. Should she have waited until the officer arrived? I mean, man, 8 minutes is a long time to look at a dog that's suffering, right? Especially when, again, you can open the door to the car. Now, legally, was she wrong to do so? Maybe. It sounds like it. Sounds like there's no exception for, violating somebody's property in defense of a pet or an animal. And maybe that should be the case, or maybe we should just rely on prosecutorial discretion. Because at the end of the day, what this woman was trying to do is to help out a dog in need. Now, again, should she have done it? I guess you can, again, you can make the case that she should have sat there and watched the dog suffer for 8 minutes rather than lifting the latch on the door and giving the dog some water. I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't think it's worth a talking to. And maybe it is worth lawmakers clarifying that, you know, what if it's a hot summer day, you see a animal in distress in a hot car? Yes, you can help alleviate that stress. You can try to save that animal. I don't know. Maybe a conversation for another day. I definitely see the other side of the story, breaking windows, another saying, I thought I saw a ferret inside. I mean, I get it. But I still think that this woman was in the right place at the right time and willing to do the right thing for a dog in need. Now, speaking of being stuck in hot places, I got to turn my air conditioning off when I do this podcast. So I am about to turn my air conditioning back on. I hope that you have a great rest of your Thursday and a wonderful weekend as well. We'll be back on Monday with more Bearing Arms Cam and Company. But be sure to check out the website between now and then. We're going to have you covered on all of the Second Amendment news and information, including what happens in Rhode Island tomorrow. Let's hope and pray for some sort of miraculous intervention here, maybe just the clock running out. Anyway, until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.